mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, 1 in 3 low-income adult women and 1 in 4 students have missed work or school during that time of month. We have details on a local campaign to end so-called period poverty. Also this morning, it's the final call to nominate deserving candidates with the spirit to be king and queen of the Cops and Kids Halloween Parade. Local Red Cross Director Todd James is part of the massive Hurricane Helene relief effort, even as Milton continues to bear down on Florida. We'll get an update. And members of the cast will join us to preview the upcoming Fort Findlay Playhouse production of Neil Simon's classic comedy, The Odd Couple. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, October 8th, 2024. Another hurricane bearing down on Florida, and this thing is a monster. It has weakened a little bit over the past several hours, but I happened to be talking to an acquaintance of mine yesterday who actually works for AEP. He said he is next in line to head to the storm zone to assist with recovery efforts. A number of his colleagues are already in the Carolinas doing work in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, and he's up next. I said, just waiting for that call to head to Florida after Hurricane Milton swings through. And he's not alone. Governor Mike DeWine deploying the Ohio National Guard to the Sunshine State, sending 40 members of a construction and engineering unit to help with recovery and relief efforts after the storm moves through. And from what I understand, and again, these numbers were as of last night, so this has probably changed because it's constantly changing, but what I had heard was sustained winds. I heard a report of sustained winds 180 miles an hour in this hurricane and wind gusts over 200. That is catastrophic. Winds. What's going to be left standing after that? And again, it's probably going to be another day and a half before it actually hits. Where it hits exactly is anybody's guess, but it looks like the Tampa area, that is. Let's see here. Expected to make landfall along Florida's Gulf Coast by tomorrow evening. Ohio Task Force 1, the state's FEMA-certified search and rescue crew, ended their operations in North Carolina yesterday, and they were initially thinking they were going to get to head back after a few days' work there, or a couple of weeks' worth there, and now it looks like they are heading back to Florida for this hurricane. So all hands on deck. And people coming in from all over the country to help out with Hurricane Milton, even as the Hurricane Helene cleanup continues. And that was the other story with the new hurricane. Folks in Tampa, which is basically really close to where Helene made landfall initially, saying that a lot of the debris from Helene is still not being cleaned up. And now here comes Milton. A lot of that loose debris will become flying projectiles once Milton gets there. So, and in between all of this, they've been getting rain. And it's not like they need any rain in Florida, and they've been getting it. So it's just words fail you when you see and hear the stories out of Florida and some of the other areas. The good news is that it doesn't look like this hurricane is going to take the same track as Helene. It's going to cross Florida and then out into the Atlantic. But still, you got a feel for the folks in the Sunshine State. Coming up here in just a bit, we're going to talk with Todd James, our conversation with Todd James about the Hurricane Helene relief effort that he has been deployed on in the Carolinas. So that coming up a little bit later on here on the program. Elsewhere, other news, other things to let you know about. Early in-person voting getting underway in Ohio today. Officials will also start mailing out absentee ballots to voters who requested them. So look for that in your mailbox here in the next couple of days. Those who are registered to vote can visit the County Board of Elections office to complete a ballot. You will need a valid photo ID, such as an Ohio driver's license or U.S. passport. Election Day itself, of course, is coming up November 5th, but you can vote early as of today in the Buckeye State. The election is here. It is upon us. By the way, even if you vote, you will still not be able to escape all of the political advertising in this final sprint, in this final month. The commercials for the candidates and issues are everywhere, but it will all be over soon. Of course, I took a little extra time off over the weekend, an extended weekend. My son got married on Saturday, so we had obviously a huge day on Saturday, a full day. The end of the day, he got married just south of Columbus and near Deer Creek State Park, just a beautiful part of the state. And we stayed at the resort at Deer Creek, and so we were driving back from the wedding to the lodge, and I turned to my wife and I said, "Man, this has been a day. It has been a day. I mean, that is a full day when you are involved in something like that these days. I don't remember even my wedding being as long and as involved as my son's wedding. But in any event, so that was the reason for the extra time off, because then on Sunday we all got together at his in-laws, and we got together, opened the gifts and the cards and, you know, all of that, and had some fun post-wedding before they headed off on their honeymoon yesterday. But we decided we could use a little extra time to recover ourselves. So I thought this was kind of interesting, given the kind of, you know, our weekend, to see this story pop up on the Newswire this morning. A couple in Australia has found their long-lost wedding video 57 years after it went missing. So the couple's from Australia, and you know where their wedding video showed up? Scotland. Terry Shine of Aberdeen, Scotland, had a collection of Super 8 films. Those 8mm films, you remember years and years ago? Maybe you're too young to remember Super 8. Back before video cameras and all of that, we had, you know, actual film cameras and small 8mm films people would shoot. Not everybody had a movie camera. If you did, you were rich. Oh, you got a movie camera. So, anyway, this guy, Mr. Shine of Aberdeen, Scotland, had this collection of Super 8 films transferred to a DVD, and he noticed there was a wedding, but he didn't recognize any of the people. One of the movies that had been transferred to DVD was a wedding between two people he didn't recognize. So he decided to get a screenshot and post a picture of the couple on his Facebook page. It went 6 months without any response, but after he shared the picture on a group it was a Facebook group that he belonged to, a couple in Australia, or a woman in Australia, spotted the photo and realized it was of her and her husband, who were married back in 1967. It turns out that Mr. Shine's uncle worked with her husband back in 1967, and they had borrowed his movie projector to watch the film of their wedding. And apparently when they returned the projector, they returned the film with it by accident. And it was lost. They thought it was lost forever. But 57 years later, they got it back. The Turnbulls had the film digitized now, so it would be preserved forever. But how crazy is that to find your wedding video? I don't even know where my wedding video is. I have no idea where our wedding video is. But yeah, 57 years later, it pops up there, and that is crazy. A couple of other items among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. So, Deadpool and Wolverine, the movie will go down as maybe the biggest box office success of the summer of 2024. And I thought this was kind of interesting. Since it's, you know, one of the big grossing movies of the year, the online casino comparison service King Casino Bonus decided to take a deep dive into which of the Marvel superheroes have been the most profitable over the years. What they did is they looked at box office receipts and also merchandising, and they gave each superhero, Marvel superhero, a rating on a scale of 1 to 10. Iron Man comes out on top. Robert Downey Jr.'s run as Iron Man spans 10 movies that earned more than $12 billion altogether. And by the way, they did include in that film count the cameo that Iron Man had in The Incredible Hulk back in 2009. But anyway, more than $12 billion all told at the box office. And the Iron Man merchandise sales make a mint as well. Coming in second, Spider-Man. Six films with Tom Holland as the web-slinger, including a trilogy of his own, $9.86 billion at the box office. And Spidey leads the Marvel Cinematic Universe in available merchandise as well. So number two overall. Third place belongs to Captain America. Chris Evans' run as the superhero generated $9.94 billion. Not as much in, a little bit more in ticket sales at the movies than Spider-Man, but not as much as merchandise. So Captain America was third. And then Black Widow and Thor rank fourth and fifth on the list of top grossing, most profitable cinematic superheroes from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I just thought that was kind of interesting. And finally here this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, a sports note. No, I'm not talking about Monday Night Football. Yeah, the Chiefs won again. Yeah. No, in basketball, history made as LeBron James and his son Bronny were the first father-son duo to take the court together in an NBA game. It happened Sunday night, the start of the second quarter of the preseason game between the Lakers and the Suns in Palm Springs. First time that the older and younger James, who are now teammates, played together in an NBA game, and it's never happened that they've had a father and son take the court together. So, pretty cool milestone. The Suns won, though. Lakers didn't win, but they did make history, so... There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today with a high in the upper 60s, mostly clear tonight, a low in the middle 40s. This is Fire Prevention Week, and the Findlay Fire Department says this year's theme is Smoke Alarms, Make Them Work for You. Fire Inspector Eric Wilkins with the Findlay Fire Department points out that smoke alarms aren't going to help you if they're not working.
Battery failure or a missing battery is the number one reason for detector failure if there's a fire in your home. It's always important to test your battery monthly. Also remember that even hardwired systems still have a battery backup and still need to be tested monthly and still need to be changed periodically.
And he says your family needs to have a plan on what to do in the event that your smoke alarms go off. Get more fire safety tips from the Findlay Fire Department in this story on our website. One of the biggest issues for Ohio voters in the November election is Issue 1, which aims to put the political map-making process in the hands of citizens instead of politicians.
As a reminder, Issue 1 would replace the current legislative and congressional map-making process that's made up of seven lawmakers with a 15-member commission. It would include five Democrats, five Republicans, and five independents. No politicians, lobbyists, or political party members would be allowed on that commission. Plus, there will be public meetings for people to weigh in on those maps before they get approved by the commission.
ONN's Colin Dorsey reporting. The city of Findlay has several road construction projects ongoing this week. Among the projects, Washington Avenue will be closed through traffic from 6th Street to Olive Street for storm sewer installation. See the full list of projects in the story on our website. From comical family adventures to frightening urban legends, the stories of Stephen Gammell have been beloved by readers for decades and now have a home at the University of Findlay's Mazza Museum. Mazza says the prominent artist has donated more than 700 pieces of artwork representing 28 titles and 9 books he's authored. Gammell's career is highlighted by his well-known illustrations for the series Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and that artwork is on long-time loan to Mazza. Get more in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Our cover story this morning, this is a really interesting statistic that you may have never even thought of before, but 1 in 3 low-income adult women and 1 in 4 students have missed either work or school during that time of month. And so now a local campaign is being launched to end what is called period poverty. Christine Reasoner is here from Trinity Lutheran Church here in Findlay, and this is, when you first heard this, was that statistic surprising to you? Because that was a surprise to me, but then again, I'm a guy. So I'm wondering, you know, when you hear that, what goes through your mind?
You know, to be honest, I didn't know the statistic either. You know, what brought my attention was actually just watching the TV one day, and there was a show on, and they were talking about this issue, and I think it was raising awareness about period poverty, and the lack of product and availability of product. So that kind of spurred my thoughts.
It is definitely one of those things that we just take for granted and don't even think about, most of us. But if you are in need, this can be a great need, and obviously, if you don't have those options available to you, then you don't have any choice that, you know, miss things that are important. Maybe it's work, school, whatever it might happen to be.
Right. On top of missing work or school, sometimes women have to use things that are not was supposed to be used whether it be socks or towels, some that are not hygienic, and that causes a lot of health issues. So that was just part of raising the awareness and trying to bridge the gap is really getting these ladies some product that are low income or in poverty.
Yeah. So I was actually going to ask, and you were kind of touching on this, how you came to be involved with this, or you were made aware of this and say, you know, we've got to do something here.
Right. So in the ELCA, the Northwest Ohio Synod, they do a leadership academy, and they also do a diaconal program, which is 2 years each. And I was in those two programs, and in those programs, they kind of have you think and dream of how you can be the church outside the walls, showing love to your neighbors. So they offer a grant, and I applied with the grant for Vicar Jacinda Jones, and we just dreamed together. I reached out to the area local nonprofits, kind of finding out, what is the need around the community?
What did you find out when you you find out about this problem, that this is an issue in communities? So you reach out locally. What did you find out?
It was amazing. Just the rash number of people that they serve in that age group, but also, unfortunately, they can't provide that product because of the expense. They have other expenses in their budget, like food and those other things that the homeless and the poverty need.
Kind of take priority.
Correct. And so they don't have room in the budget for period poverty products. So I felt that we could be a place where we can start the conversation and also raise awareness and get some donated products to provide.
It's certainly understandable how a lot of the charities would have other priorities that would take precedence, and you have to kind of pick and choose, and it would make sense that food would kind of probably take the highest priority. So how do you address this then? You realize that there is a need, that it is a need that is not really well met in the community. So how do you address that?
So what we started first was we ran out to the nonprofits and gave them a need-based survey, trying to figure out the numbers that they serve, but also kind of what they might need or what mm-hmm. they use. Mm-hmm. And that included the schools out in Ottawa and their youth out there. Mm-hmm. And then once we got that in, we kind of went through and said, okay, how can we be part of the solution? And part of that is raising awareness through this radio station, which I appreciate, mm-hmm. Maybe an article in the Courier, but also just putting out flyers and educating people on the statistics.
Yeah.
But also kind of debunking some of the myths. And I think people don't realize that you can't use WIC or SNAP benefits for your period poverty products. So mm-hmm. They use those for food and everything, but because they're a taxable item, they're unable to purchase that with their WIC and SNAP.
Interesting.
Which I didn't understand and realize. And yeah. I think the more I talk to people, they don't understand that either.
Yeah.
So
the farther you go in this, you realize just how great the need is and how few options there are for those who find themselves in that situation.
Correct. And I think, too, it's the stigma. I mean, it's people sure. don't talk about it as right. much. I mean, they're getting better at it.
Right.
But generational things, it was a private thing. You just mm-hmm. kept it to yourself.
And yeah.
So ending the stigma of, hey, you know, this is a problem. I need some products, talking about it. But I think also being able to openly discuss and even maybe advocate for that.
Yeah, yeah. So you've launched this program, and it is running, started this past weekend. You're doing this through not quite the end of the month, but here over the next couple of weeks, reaching out to ask folks to donate and help address this problem. How can folks help? How can we get involved?
So if you go to Trinity Lutheran Church Findlay in Facebook, there are a couple events that I've posted. One has a QR code for a wish list for the Findlay area, but mm-hmm. also there's one for Ottawa as well. So anything collected out of the Ottawa will go out to those schools, Ottawa Glandorf, and everything collected here in Findlay will stay in this area as well. You can do it that way. You can send or drop off product. We have 11 different locations.
Wow.
Yes, we have 7 in Findlay, and then we have 3 or 4 out in Ottawa. And I can plug them right now, or we can just look on the website.
sure. There are, we can go ahead and, where can folks make their donations? One of them, by the way, is at the church at Trinity
Correct.
Lutheran.
We do have a bin at Trinity Lutheran Church. We also have bins at Three Oaks in Findlay, Revive Salon and Spa, Vibe Hair Studio, the YMCA Main Branch, Romans Hair Designers, Southside Nail and Spa, and St. John's in Findlay.
Okay.
If you're out in Ottawa, you are going to be going to Well Grounded Cafe, mm-hmm. New Creations Church, or Challenge Champions.
Okay.
So so you can drop off product there. You can make monetary donations and send them to Trinity Lutheran Church.
Mm-hmm.
But make sure in the memo you put period poverty so it yeah. gets in the right spot.
yeah. And this continues through the 21st. And then how do you distribute these donations once they are collected?
So once we collect all the products, we are going to sit down and figure out which charities we're going to donate to, mm-hmm. Depending on how much product we're able to collect.
Yeah.
And
who best would be able to get them into the hands of those who need them.
Correct. Yeah. Yep. And so we'll go to those different organizations. We'll ask them what their storage situation is like.
Mm-hmm.
If they're able to take it all, we'll give it all at one time. If not, our little team of 10 is going to keep refilling their bins
yeah.
from our church where they're going to be stored.
It is a terrific program. And again, it addresses a need that I think many people in the community didn't even realize was an issue. But like you said, calling attention to it is maybe the first step in, changing this narrative or improving the problem for so many low-income women, young and old alike,
mm-hmm.
Because again, it's about missing school, it's about missing work, and any number of other things as well, just because of a lack of product. We have a link up on our webpage. You mentioned that there is a QR code. So if you don't know you know, what to get, what is needed. If you're a guy like me who has never had to shop for these things before, you do have a QR code where folks can learn more.
Correct. That's with the Amazon wish list, or go to any local grocery store and you can buy any type of pad or tampon. It doesn't have to be a certain brand. Yeah. We'll take whatever.
Exactly. And again, monetary donations are accepted as well. So
correct.
We've got the link at goodmornings.net if you want to learn more. Again, Christine Reasoner from Trinity Lutheran Church in Findlay, and their campaign to end period poverty going on throughout the month. Christine, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, the countdown is on to the annual Cops and Kids Halloween Parade. And joining us this morning with an early preview, including details on this year's King and Queen contest, is Teresa White from the Fort Findlay FOP Lodge 20 Foundation. And Teresa, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Getting excited now.
Yes.
Everything is starting to come together. How many entries do we have in this year's parade?
The last I looked, we had over 100 registered entries. Now, that does not include the dignitaries who will be marching. That does not include the fire trucks. That does not include our sponsors. We have over 100 paid entries so far this year.
Wow, that is terrific. And what a great boom for the Fort Findlay FOP Lodge 20 Foundation.
Absolutely. A couple of years ago, when Hancock Leadership approached us and asked us if we wanted to take over stewardship of the Halloween parade, it fit. Our mission is to increase positive interaction between youth and law enforcement. And every kid in Findlay is at the parade, and every cop in Findlay is working the parade. So it works great for us.
Yeah. And the mission of the foundation to foster those connections, you do that in a number of ways. The parade has become kind of a premier fundraiser for those events that you do.
Absolutely. All of the funds raised at the Halloween parade go into the Cops and Kids Champion Fund, which ensure those positive interactions continue. It also ensures that we're able to support law enforcement in Hancock County.
Yeah. So give us all of the details. First of all, on the parade itself, this is going to be similar to last year's setup, right?
Absolutely. The parade is Tuesday, October 22nd.
Okay.
Steps off at 7 o'clock. From the intersection of South Main Street and Lake Cascades and 6th Street, marches northbound all the way to Lima Street, past State Bank Judges Square, which will be at the intersection of Main and Baldwin, where I'm looking forward to seeing you for the live stream.
We will be there live streaming for those who can't be there in person. The only downside of watching on the live stream is that you don't get candy that way.
You don't get candy. You will have to hit Meijer or Walmart and grab some and have your own bowl there and maybe make yourself some popcorn.
Well, there you go. You can do that. But we certainly encourage folks to come down because it is just a terrific event. It continues, always has amazed me how many people actually come out for this parade. I mean, I have literally been to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City, and I will say that the crowd is comparable along the parade route. It is just amazing.
That's fabulous to hear. I mean, we would like to pretend that everybody's out there to support cops and kids and to be a cops and kids champion, but we know everybody's out for the candy. That's good stuff. And in that spirit, we would like to encourage the parents at the parade to help keep their kids out of the road.
Yeah.
That would be fabulous.
Yeah.
It makes everybody a little anxious when you're driving a big rig down South Main Street.
Absolutely.
Makes everybody a bit
especially
anxious.
Especially when it's a little dark and, you know, kind of hard to see. It's
yes.
A bit, so just something to keep in mind when you're coming down. But people come out early and stake out their spots and all of that. So.
Absolutely. We encourage that.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned the King and Queen. This is something you started last year, right?
We did. So a couple of years ago when we took over the parade, we started surveying both parade participants and parade goers. Because we wanted to not only make a lot of money for our fundraiser, but we wanted to put on the best event we possibly could. And one of the things that kept coming back is, well, where are we being judged? How are we being judged? Who are the judges?
Yeah.
So that was the advent of State Bank Judges Square. So now we have an elevated, lighted platform where our judges will, you know, you'll have the opportunity to bribe the judges and all of the good fun things, but everybody knows where they're going to be judged. Well, if we're going to have these judges on display for everyone, my goodness, who's going to be a judge? So we have an FOP, an FOP representative judging this year. We have a sponsor representative judging this year. And then we will have the parade king and queen. We are accepting nominations on our website through midnight tonight,
okay,
which is fortfinleyfop20.org. Pick somebody who you know loves Halloween, somebody yes. who has been planning their decorations since sometime around Mother's Day, absolutely loves Halloween, embodies the spirit. Maybe somebody that's got one of those.
Embodies the spirit.
Embodies the spirit of Halloween.
The spirit.
Yes.
You got to say that in your, like.
In my radio voice?
Your Frankenstein voice. Embodies the spirit of yes. Halloween.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll be taking nominations through midnight tonight, and then the committee will select king and queen tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will be announcing it via Facebook within the next few days. King and queen will be coronated. Is that the right word? Coronated?
Yeah. Yeah.
At the parade.
Okay.
And they will get a crown, a sash, and a scepter, and a fabulous dinner catered by our friend Lisa at the Baker's Cafe.
Awesome. So what will the responsibilities be for the king and queen?
To judge.
Okay. They will be part of the judges.
Yes. They will be up there. They will be judging all of our floats. They will be helping us select all of the winners of the different parade awards, which will then be announced on Thursday via live stream on our Facebook page.
Okay. Now, the king and queen candidates, do they have to be of a particular age? Is there an age range for this?
We would prefer that they are adults.
Okay.
Only because our judges' platform does not have a whole lot of space on it. So for parents to have to be up there to watch their kids would be a bit much.
Okay.
So we would prefer adults.
Okay. So this is a chance for grown-ups to take part in all of the fun as well.
Absolutely. Get your nominations in, nominate a neighbor, nominate yourself, get them in.
Okay. Again, midnight tonight is the, which of course is, you know, by midnight.
Absolutely.
Midnight to nominate tonight. The person who embodies the spirit of Halloween for king and queen. We mentioned that this is a big fundraiser.
Yes,
and,
it is.
It's an awful lot of fun, but with a serious side. What do you use the funds here for?
So, like I said, all of the funds go into the Cops and Kids Champion Fund, and that ensures continued positive interaction between youth and law enforcement. We have our largest event coming up the first Sunday in December, which will be Cops and Kids Go Shopping.
Mm-hmm.
We will take and we will pair local children with a police officer and set them loose with a $200 Meijer gift card. Everybody can imagine how fabulous that is for the kids.
Yeah.
Getting to go Christmas shopping, no holds barred, have a good time. But, you know, the officers have been asking me about it since like June.
Yeah.
Making sure, when is it? I need to make sure I get the day off. When is it? I want to make sure that I'm there. I mean, it's the only day of the year where people are happy to see them when they show up at work.
Right.
So they really, really look forward to it.
Yeah. That is the big event that you do each year and everybody looks forward to. But there are many others that you are involved in throughout the year.
Absolutely. We have three active programs, including Cops and Kids Get Involved, which is any officer that we have that wants to get involved with kids. For example, we put Officer White and Sergeant Wallbauer on the ice cream truck earlier this year and set them loose on free vend for an entire afternoon. So anything that we can do to build those positive interactions. Another program that we have will be funding in February is Cops and Kids Go to College. And that is a memorial scholarship honoring Officer Doug Akers, who we lost in the line of duty in 2018.
Terrific. The events that you do with the Cops and Kids Get Involved, where do those ideas come from? Those come from the officers themselves or...
A lot of them do. A lot of them come from the officers themselves. What things that they are already involved in, things that we would like to see them be involved in, and people in the community that are like, hey, you know, we're having an event and we would like to see if we can get an officer there. And if it fits our mission, we're going to do everything that we can to do it.
Well, that's really cool because talk about, you know, kind of sparking the creative ways of getting cops and kids involved with each other and getting everybody thinking in that direction is a big deal.
It is. It is a big deal because sometimes those interactions, just one of them, can change the day for an officer. It can change the life of a child.
Yeah.
And our kids are our future. It's very important.
Also, I guess we probably should mention, give you the opportunity to plug the sponsors who help make the Halloween parade possible.
Absolutely.
Because again, this is the big event. Everybody looks forward to it all year long, the Halloween parade. and it would not be possible without the outside support.
Yes. So I'm exceptionally grateful to our sponsors, not just because they pay to be part of the parade, but because they allow me to put on a premier event. Our sponsorships have been sold out since April 1st, which means since that day, yeah. I haven't had to hustle for funds. I've been able to sit down and focus on what do you like to see in the parade? What was the problems that we had last year? How can we fix that?
Yeah.
So we would really like to thank our sponsors, Loan Depot and Marathon Petroleum, State Bank, South Branch Solar. And then we have some in-kind sponsors, VCA Animal Hospital, the Baker's Cafe, Mancy's, and National Lyman Stone is also a sponsor. And thank you also to John LaRich.
Terrific stuff. Bigger and better every year. The Cops and Kids Halloween Parade, and the date is October 22nd.
Yes.
Circle it on the calendar. And again, get the nominations in for King and Queen by midnight tonight. We've got the link up on our webpage for more information. Teresa White from the Fort Finley FOP Lodge 20 Foundation, thanks very much for dropping by. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for having me.
So I mentioned earlier that local Red Cross director Todd James has been deployed as part of the massive relief effort from Hurricane Helene, which struck Florida's Big Bend region a couple of weeks ago, but ended up causing as much or more damage as it kept on going through Georgia and Tennessee and into the Carolinas. And the cleanup and recovery continues, even as Florida is now under the gun, under the threat of another major storm in Hurricane Milton that is expected to hit somewhere around the Tampa area later this week. Yesterday afternoon, we spoke to Todd James about this latest disaster deployment and what comes next as Milton bears down on the region. Where are you and what are you seeing where you are?
Well, I'm currently in Greenville, South Carolina, and it is right here where I am because, you know, we're not right in the middle of the affected area where we have the headquarters set up, but around us and to a wide swath of South Carolina, Western North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, as you said, the devastation is almost unimaginable. This is this storm was the worst to hit the United States since Katrina.
It seems as though the reason why people are calling this in some respects even worse than Katrina is because, for the most part, you had one city, one state impacted, or a couple of states, and here this is literally hundreds of miles.
Yeah, it is a massive swath of destruction, you know, all the way from the Big Bend area of Florida up
right.
to Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and, you know, the Carolinas have been hit so hard, Western North Carolina, the Asheville area. We still have a lot of areas that are isolated. Crews have not been able to get in. Roads are closed.
In some cases, roads not even there anymore. Folks, remember, again, comparing it to Katrina in the aftermath, there were some people who said, well, why did these people not evacuate? And it wasn't that simple. Sometimes they were unable. And here again, you know, some people say, well, why didn't they weren't better prepared? But some of these areas have never experienced this level of hurricane damage before. They'll get the after effects move through, but this seemed to be even more than what they could have predicted or been expected to prepare for.
I would agree with that. I think in listening to a lot of the people that I've met down here and listening to some of the news reports with local officials and the folks who live in this area, I mean, they've been through storms and they've
right.
felt the effects of hurricanes, but nobody has seen anything like this in their lifetime and had any idea that it would be this bad. So a lot of the communities did prepare. I mean, they took the precautions and a lot of families took the precautions that they've taken before and that, you know, they knew they were supposed to do, but no one expected a storm of
right.
this ferocity to make it this far and cause this much damage.
Reminds us that Mother Nature has the final word, and now we have got Milton churning in the
the Gulf of Mexico as a Category 5 storm as of the moment we are having this conversation. The latest track has it making landfall again near the Tampa area sometime on Wednesday. Now, the good news for the communities where you are in the Carolinas, in Tennessee, is that it doesn't appear that Milton will take that track. But how will that impact the response in this storm, having another major storm hit so close to the last one in terms of timing, where now you're going to have a yet another storm to have to help folks recover from?
You know, we do not expect it to make a major impact on this operation in terms of the resources that we've committed to Hurricane Helene response. We're not pulling up stakes. We're not going to take half the workforce and say, okay, now you're headed to Florida.
Yeah.
Because the work that is being done and has to be done here is so vital, and it's not nearly complete. So we're rallying the troops. We have folks all over Florida who are pre-positioning and getting everything ready. Evacuation centers are starting to be open, and the Red Cross, of course, will be a partner with that, with the state of Florida and the other partners we work with. And then a lot of those evacuation centers may well turn into long-term shelters, and we'll do that moving forward. So preparations are already happening. Over 90% of the more than 2,100 people that are just responding to Hurricane Helene here, those are volunteers. Those are folks who have, of their own accord, left behind their families, their jobs, and their homes to come here and help. And there are more that are doing the same for Milton and Florida. While we continue to also be home. The Red Cross is still there. We're still there responding to home fires. I know we just had a fire in Hancock County and in Lorain County. And so we have to be able and continue to do the response we do at home. So yes, volunteers are vital. If you've been watching all of this and thinking, I really would like to do something to help, we can get you trained pretty quickly and get you in a shelter where there are lots of families that could really use your help. Just give us a call, 800-RED-CROSS, and we'd love to talk to you about those volunteer opportunities.
More volunteers, more deployments, more of a need for help being demonstrated by what we saw last week, what we are seeing develop this week. Again, Todd James, the North Central Ohio chapter of the American Red Cross, who is in South Carolina as part of the Red Cross deployment, recovery deployment for Hurricane Helene. And Todd, thanks very much for the quick update. Certainly stay safe and get back home soon.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it and appreciate all the support that I get from home. I get all these messages on social media and folks reaching out, and I truly do appreciate it. You know, we've got our Heroes Awards coming up on October 23rd, and really excited. The first time we're doing this event and going to honor some local folks who stepped in times of crisis to help. So I'll be home in time for that and looking forward to it. But, you know, really glad that I can be here. And that's because of our volunteers, because of the team that the Red Cross has right there in Hancock County and across the North Central Ohio chapter, our board of directors, all of our volunteers. They do amazing work. So that makes it possible for me to be able to be here. And I truly appreciate that.
Our conversation yesterday with Todd James of the North Central Ohio chapter of the American Red Cross. We appreciate Todd for taking a little bit of time out of his very busy schedule with the relief effort from Hurricane Helene and all that is going on there to speak to us about that effort. If you want to support the Red Cross and their mission to help those folks recover from that storm and, of course, the next one in Hurricane Milton that is bearing down on Florida, you can check our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net, and we've got a link up there for more information.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. This out of Columbus, Ohio, where a woman... Now, this is another one of these stories where it's a case of mistaken identity. Somebody stumbles across something they think is maybe a crime scene or something grisly, and they call police who investigate and find that it's really nothing at all. A Columbus, Ohio woman who discovered a rug while digging in her backyard thought it might be hiding something even more sinister, you know, like a dead body rolled up in a rug. Apparently, she'd been watching too many old mobster movies or something. The discovery led to a full-fledged police investigation that the homeowner documented online. Katie Santry is her name. The post on social media has generated over 3 million views. She had a video of the investigation. Two cadaver dogs brought in to try and confirm her suspicions, but all they found was some remnants of a rug. That's all that they found. Somehow, and nobody knows how the rug got buried in the backyard, but but there was no body. The authorities suspect that maybe someone who somebody had a bloody nose or something on the rug and just buried it. What the cadaver dogs did detect in the hole was anybody's guess. They did detect something, but there were no bones, no body, no nothing. It apparently was just a rug. Like I said, this is somebody who's watched too many cop shows on TV or too many mobster movies that you find a rug buried in the backyard, and immediately your mind goes to, there's got to be a dead body wrapped up in it. Well, apparently it turned out to be nothing. What the dogs detected, who knows, but maybe her dog had buried a bone somewhere there. I don't know. Let's see. What else is going on in the broken news? If you have ever hunted for a job and thought it was, you know, a tough slog, job hunting is tough. But a British woman, the international file here, a British woman who applied for a job 50 years ago has finally gotten a response. 50 years ago, Tizzy Hodson. She is now 70 years old. Back when she was 20, she sent in an application for a job January of 1976. And she said, I always wondered why I never heard back. And now I know why. Her rejection letter arrived back in her mailbox with a note from the Postal Service saying, late delivery. This letter was found behind a drawer. So it's only about 50 years late. But, you know, they deliver. Their job is to deliver the mail, even if it's 50 years late. So she found out 50 years later she didn't get the job. She wasn't waiting all this time. She actually had applied for a job as a motorcycle stunt rider. That was the job she had applied for. And she said even though it was her dream job and she never got it, she did go on to become a snake handler, an aerobatic pilot, and a flying instructor. So, she's had a full, rich life nonetheless. And now, 50 years later, she has the rejection letter confirmed that she didn't get the job. So. let's see what else is going on in the broken news. This is a another viral video. I mentioned the video that went viral out of Columbus with the woman who discovered the rug buried in her backyard. Jack Doherty is a YouTube celebrity, I guess. Well, he's a celebrity now. His video has gone viral where he was driving his $200,000 McLaren supercar and live streaming as he texted, and he was driving in the rain. You can probably guess what happens next, right? The 20-year-old can be seen looking down at his phone as he drives on a highway in Miami this past Saturday. Moments later, he loses control of the vehicle and crashed into a guardrail, totaling his $200,000 supercar. Apparently, this was all a live stream. There were about 185,000 viewers at the time. His cameraman sustained some minor injuries, and now he has been banned from posting any future videos. Totaled his $200,000 McLaren because he was texting and live streaming in the rain while he was driving. Too bad. I would guess, because this is just how these YouTubers think, he was probably more devastated by being banned from posting any new videos than losing his $200,000 car. You know? That would be it for me, but you know, these YouTubers, they just, what do you mean I can't post any more videos? A couple of other items here in the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. Have you ever had ants invade your picnic? That's annoying, right? Well, imagine a swarm of giant ants dismantling your tent while you are sleeping in it. That's what happened to Paul Rosoli. He is a conservationist, and he was camping out in the Peruvian Amazon one night. And millions of leafcutter ants, which is a species of ants that can carry 20 times their body weight, millions of these leafcutter ants, they harvest leaves. They can carry up to 20 times their body weight. They use it to harvest leaves. So he said in the middle of the night, it was like a battle to the death with these ants. He captured a video that he shared on Instagram. There's about 10 million leafcutter ants outside the tent, he says, and they are carving leaf-sized holes out of his tent, carrying away the nylon into the night. They destroyed and carried off his tent. As if that wasn't bad enough, the giant holes they left in his tent let in other creepy crawlers, like mosquitoes and centipedes, and even a monster-sized tarantula. But he was not fazed by any of it. Now, for me, I'd be ready to cut my camping trip short. But Mr. Rosoli said, this is what camping in the wild is all about. He just decided that he pitched his tent in the wrong spot. Vowed to do better next time. For me, there would be no next time. If I had ever had that happen while I was camping, that would be it for the camping adventures for me. I think I would be done. He's a hearty guy. And finally, in the broken news, here is a Halloween-themed story. Bob's Big Boy. You're familiar with Bob's Big Boy restaurants, right? They have the giant statue of Bob out front of the restaurants. Well, a restaurant statue in Southern California is back, but not exactly what people expected. Back in August, a car had an accident outside the intersection near the restaurant. Car had an accident, sheared off a fire hydrant that went flying and partially decapitated the iconic statue. It's in Downey, California, southeast of downtown Los Angeles. So they've had this statue with part of its head missing. And so someone at the restaurant had the brilliant idea with Halloween coming that they stuffed the inside of the head or the opening in Bob's, the big boy head, with a brain, a fake brain. And now the Instagram account for the diner shows a photo of Bob with his brain exposed for Halloween with the caption, "It's alive." That is creative. I love it. I'm going to have to look that up. Bob's Big Boy with his brain exposed for Halloween. It's alive. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Lance of LSU Extension. It's harvest season. Drivers will be sharing roads with combines and grain hauling vehicles. Please be alert, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this fall to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Since Halloween is coming, we're talking about the Halloween parade this morning and all of that, this is very appropriate. The question is, from this survey, how young is too young to see a scary movie? A survey of 2,000 adults found 65% of Americans saw their first horror flick by the age of 11. Some even younger than that, but age 11 seems to be a delineating time. You know, it is by age 11. That seems to be the threshold. That's the word that I'm looking for, the threshold. And I know the constant question is, we let our kids watch scary movies before they're ready for them. It will traumatize them. But apparently that is not the case. 68% in the survey said that they enjoyed watching scary movies as kids. 73% said they still enjoy them today. Now, of course, it depends on the kind of film that we're talking about. I love scary movies like the psychological thrillers, and that I'm not a big fan of the slasher films. You know, give me the Shining or Psycho or The Sixth Sense. I enjoy those, but the Friday the 13th movies, the Saw films, not a big fan. But I thought this was interesting because they went further in this survey. 71% of those who watch scary movies say that they are likely to snack while watching this scary movie, and some popcorn or, you know, what have you. It just goes hand in hand. But I thought this was kind of interesting. The gorier the movies are, the more likely people are to choose different Halloween kind of candies. 34% of the gore hounds, people who would pick movies with the most bloody scenes, prefer gummy Halloween candy. I don't know why. The Fort Findlay Playhouse season of productions rolls on, with the next show being Neil Simon's classic comedy, The Odd Couple, which opens next week. We are joined in the studio by Seth Carey and Jeff Lee, who are the lead characters in the show. Gentlemen, thank you both for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
So I think most people of a certain age know the basic premise of The Odd Couple. For those who may not be familiar with the play or the sitcom, which was on TV for a number of years, kind of tell us about brief synopsis of this show.
Well, Oscar and Felix are as different as you could possibly be. They're both going through divorces in which they are both responsible for character traits that have driven their wives away.
Yeah.
Oscar reaches out a helping hand to help get Felix back on his feet, and they start making the same mistakes but with each other, and hilarity ensues.
So they move in together. Mm-hmm. You've got two completely polar opposites. Oscar is the slob. Mm-hmm. Felix is the neat freak. Mm-hmm. And so I have to ask, are you kind of typecast in these roles, or?
I'll let you take this one to start with.
Well, Felix is described as a fastidious, neurotic nut. And nobody has ever called me fastidious.
Okay. fair enough. That's a word that you don't often hear very often, so I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But this is one of those shows that we mentioned so many people are familiar with it, mm-hmm. if not familiar with the play, familiar with the TV show. And I always ask, when you take on a well-known production, if that makes it challenging in any way, given that people identify so closely with the characters, with certain actors, you know, Jack Klugman and Tony Randall played the mm-hmm. roles on TV. And so when I think Oscar Madison and Felix Unger, that's who I picture. So.
Sure. And I think that's, first of all, that's a great question. You know, I think that it's tough sometimes to take on a well-known character because people have their ideas, like mm-hmm. you said, of what the character is supposed to be. Yeah. This is what they talk like. This is what their mannerisms are like. Mm-hmm. And I do think, you know, it's important to, as an actor, do your research mm-hmm. and go and I've watched several different productions of this play. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to take the character and make it your own. Right. You know, my Oscar is not going to be the same as somebody else's. There might be aspects that are the same.
Yeah.
But my portrayal will be my own. And, yeah. And that's something that I think is important as an actor.
Unlike some productions, again, that are well-known and recognizable, it's the TV show that I think people, mm-hmm. Most people will know. But obviously that takes the characters of the play and expands on it, puts them into all kinds of different situations. But the play is not that necessarily.
No, the play is quite different. The premise is the same, mm-hmm. But it's very much one story. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a brief period of time, yeah. Just showing the guys interacting yeah. and you know, the growing pains of any relationship, yeah. You know, especially a roommate relationship.
My understanding is that Neil Simon wrote this. It was, you know, brought to him as it had its genesis in a true story.
Oh, really?
Two guys that, you know, actually. So this is an examination of, you know, that dynamic that, you know, is actually real. I mean, this is not just a figment of someone's imagination.
Well, yeah, the show takes place over the course of just 3 weeks is the entire duration of the show. And so it's amazing how quickly oil and water cannot mix in 3 weeks.
You start to find out why they have such problems with relationships. So the Odd Couple tickets are on. I was thinking, you're talking about this, again, if you're familiar with the TV show, this would almost be like a prequel to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very much.
Look at it in that way.
This is an origin story, if you will.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, how they came to be.
Tickets are on sale now, right?
Exactly. You can get them three different ways. You can get them via phone on Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. By calling 567-525-3636, option one. You can get them online anytime at our website, fortfinleyplayhouse.org/tickets, or you can get them at the door. The doors open 30 minutes before curtain, and usually there are seats available if you just want to stop in.
Terrific. And opening night is?
Thursday the 17th.
Okay.
And Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of next week. Thursday, Friday, Saturday will be at 8 o'clock. Sunday is at 3.
Okay.
And then the following week, the 25th through the 27th, Friday, Saturday at 8, Sunday at 3 again.
Okay. And as we've always said, when we talk with the folks, the Fort Finley Playhouse, for any of the productions, always welcome. There are, you know, more shows coming. And if you've ever thought of getting involved in community theater, it is just a terrific thing to be a part of.
Absolutely. We are always looking for more volunteers to help both on stage and off. If you're interested in getting involved, we do have our board meetings are the first and fourth Wednesday. I said it right this time. First and fourth Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m. in the basement of the Playhouse. You can come and get information on how to get involved. One note about the tickets. Any unclaimed tickets 5 minutes prior to curtain can be resold. So if you have a ticket and you don't show up within 5 minutes of the curtain, that ticket can be resold. So make sure you get there early.
All right. Very good. Again, Seth Carey, Jeff Lee with us from the Neil Simon classic comedy, The Odd Couple, next production of the Fort Finley Playhouse. And we have a link on our webpage for more information about it. Gentlemen, thanks very much for taking the time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage,
And that, of course, is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow, here's how you know autumn is truly here. It's the 35th annual Van Buren Apple Butter Festival, and it's happening this weekend. We'll get a preview. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.